What would you say if you said you had some guiding principles for when you're starting a strategy with whoever the client is? Obviously, you know, each client's different. What would be your guiding principles that you start to look at when you start looking at and supporting someone with a strategy?
Especially as I support small businesses, I think the key, it can be really, really hard to look too far in advance. So the question that I always start with to people is, where do you want to be at this time next year? We're only looking 12 months ahead. It's really easy. So like, where do you want to be this time next year? How will that feel for you? How will that be different for you in terms of understanding why it's important? I think especially if you're creating a strategy for a small business, if you're a solo business owner, it's really important to understand why those things are important. What will be different for you when that strategy comes to life? Like, how will it feel? What will change in your life? What will change in your business?
Welcome to the Hands On Business Podcast. Where else are you going to come to get tips, tricks, and advice on growing your business? As you know, what people tend to love about this podcast is that it is a place where you can hear real business leaders discussing systems, methodologies, and strategies that they have used to help them catapult growth in their business. So I'm your podcast host, Hakeem Adebiyi, and I've grown several small businesses to multi-million pound enterprises and noticed that there wasn't really a place that focused on where I was, i.e. growing a small business. All of the content that seemed to be out there was about big business and often just a lot of theory and no practical implementable advice, which is exactly why I set up this podcast. So joining me today is going to be Nicole Louise Weiner, and we're going to be getting into everything strategy related and looking at what the key steps to actually deliver a strategy that works. So some people may well be thinking, not a particularly interesting topic, but I can assure you that if you want to be successful in business, having a cogent and successful strategy is key to everything you do. So we're going to be getting into all of that stuff about what the guiding principles for a decent strategy, you know, how do you plan, you know, what the goals, what's the time frame that you should be looking at, how do you pivot, and all of that good stuff. So really excited to get into it. Happy listening. So whenever you're in a business, you'll hear people either talking about or asking for your strategy. Now, interestingly enough, everybody seems to have a different view on what is meant by strategy and certainly on how to devise and implement one. And I've often seen people spending months on putting a strategy together, launching it to the business, and then no one ever looks at that strategy until the following year when it's time for review. So that's very unlikely to work, I think, if you're only looking at it once a year and you're just dusting it off and blowing off the cobwebs. So on today's show, I'm delighted to say that I have Nicole Louise Weiner, who is a business strategist and also has a BSc in psychology. And I'm hoping that what we're going to discuss today is going to help that kind of dilemma that I've just mentioned, i.e. getting a business plan, dusting it off, doing it once a year, and it not really working. Because what we're going to be talking about is key steps to build a strategy that works. So welcome, Nicole, and thanks for being on the show.
Thank you for having me. What a lovely introduction. I'm excited to be here.
Excellent. So I'm going to kick off, really, because as I said, everyone talks about strategy, but I want to kick off with, how would you define strategy? A simple, you know, determination that if people are thinking what we're going to be talking about, you just say, well, this is what I mean when I'm talking about strategy.
Okay, so brilliant question to start off. When I have delivered masterclasses on this, and when I talk to my clients about this, what I talk about is, okay, so I used to work in banking, right? So I was never in the front line, I was in the head office, but a lot of people would go to traditionally a bank manager to ask for investment. Okay. So you're going to a bank manager, what kinds of things are they asking you for? Basically, what they're doing is they're asking you for the legitimacy, the proof in that the business is going to work to a certain, we can never guarantee, but to a certain extent, so that their investment that they're making in you is likely to be returned, right? In terms of your risk level. We need to be doing this for yourself. So you need to have a plan, a strategy, a guide, and goals, and how you're going to implement those in place where you can reliably, realistically see that that plan, that strategy, that thing that you're putting together that brings all of the parts together in terms of how you're going to generate sales, what marketing there is in there, what your dream client or ideal client looks like, you know, all of that in one place. So that actually the time, because most of the time when you have a business, it's about the time you're investing rather than necessarily cash, right? Especially at the beginning. So it's about making sure that the strategy that you're creating in your business makes you more of a sure thing. That's what I'd say.
Okay, thank you very much. So effectively, it's the plan to get you from where you are to where you want to be in essence, with all of the bells and whistles that obviously we're going to talk about as we go through. So just tell us a little bit about, because you've just talked about the fact you started in banking. So tell us a bit more about your experience with developing successful strategies then. Because that'd be useful for
successful strategies, definitely. So, I mean, I did this. I used to do this when I worked in banking. So I spent 10 years at HSBC, one of the world's leading FTSE 100 global banks, investment banks. And I used to work on the behind the scenes strategy with the directors, with the senior leaders, and also then help to implement that into the front line or into the call centers or into products and services and manage that in terms of the teams. And then now in terms of small business, I work with solo business owners or people who have either a team of freelancers or employees up to around 5 to 10 in terms of making sure that their business is profitable. So when we look at that phrase there in terms of successful strategies, actually a lot of it is about testing, but it's also about having a clear enough goal in mind to know why you're taking action. So on the days when you don't really know what to do or you're feeling like your focus is off, which it will be because sometimes because that's life and we have a lot of stuff going on, it's about making sure that you have that in mind in terms of the overall framework, but then thinking, okay, how can I flex this? And being able to test that regularly enough and come back. Like you were saying at the beginning there, it's not a once a year thing. It's a thing that we need to be looking at all of the time. And I love to plan in my own business the same way that lots of my clients come to me for the similar sorts of support is I'm neurodiverse, right? So I have ADHD. So when I'm looking at, I can look into the future. I can do that. That's not how my ADHD limits me. But what I also need is that flex. So when I've got the stuff in the moment that feels good, I can buzz off of that and lean into it and adapt. So a brilliant example, like in terms of lead gen, next week, I'm running a masterclass where the topic of that was not going to be the topic that it is going to be now, because I'm leaning into what people are saying that they want. And this is really important in terms of market trends, in terms of the market evolving, your clients evolving, the services, where people are showing up. So there's a lot of there in terms of developing those strategies, testing, being open to testing. And I know that can be really hard because we want all the answers and we want the certainty and we want the, you know, we want that. But that's not, we can't guarantee these things. But what we want to do is give you the best chance of success. That's what we're looking for.
No, I appreciate that. So the best chance of, and actually that leads into one of the questions that one of my audience members asked, which is, she's called Gem, and she asked, have that changed? Because I think she works in a big company, I'm not allowed to say who, but she works for a big company, and they do like historically, you know, 3 to 5 year strategic plans. Now that you've got the digital age, and you're just talking about there about testing, and you're talking about market trends, have that changed in terms of how often you should be revisiting your strategy, and how often should that be?
I don't think it's changed. I think it's flexed. So it's not changed completely. There's not a total pivot. I talk about this. I know, like COVID 2020, that year that we all remember so well, meant a lot of people were pivoting what they were doing. And I think this is more about naturally evolving it into a different stage. So with the digital age, with the digital age we are in, it would be silly not to revisit it as often as you possibly can, but we need to be really clear that you're giving it long enough to test it, that you're being consistent with the actions you're taking, the things that you're putting in place, because otherwise all you end up doing is swinging from one thing to the next. And it is really, really key, you know, in terms of that saying that it hasn't changed, looking longer term and saying, right, okay, like, where do you want it to be in 5 years? Where do you want it to be in 3 years? And then what are those short term actions that you're taking to move you closer towards that? What strategies will we put in place in terms of your marketing, your sales, your tech, your team, so that it's growing with you and testing that regularly? Yeah.
Excellent. So, and then based on that, what are some of the biggest challenges that you faced when developing a strategy?
I think it's interesting. The biggest challenge is not giving it enough time.
Yeah.
So thinking that, okay, I've set this goal for myself. I've set this idea, this dream, this vision of where I want things to be in 12 months' time, in 6 months' time, in 2 years' time, you know, depending on your strategy type and how you like to plan, it could be different in terms of how long in advance. But then not actually assessing regularly enough, like how that's working, and not giving enough time either. So if you're doing things something for a week and you're like, yeah, but I was showing up in my digital strategy and I was on, you know, social selling, I was growing an audience, I ran some ads, I did whatever the thing was, and you did it one time with one metric and one test, we're not giving it long enough to see what data is coming in. And the data doesn't lie. So we need to be looking at the evidence behind the numbers. So what's happening? How many times was that? What were the messages? What does that look like? What was your sales process? Like, what can we tweak there? And actually giving it long enough to test it though. So, you know, consistently inviting people, for example, if you have your own business, to book into your diary, doing that over one or two pieces of content you create or sending out a couple of emails is not enough. So when we're looking at developing a strategy and the challenges that there are, it's about giving it time and staying consistent, which can be really hard when it feels like it's not working and you've got like, you're getting tumbleweed and you're not getting the results quickly. Because if we can touch on this, I talk about this quite a lot actually. We are in a world with the digital age as well of instant gratification being a norm. We want everything now. We're impatient. So it's about reminding yourself that it takes time. It does take time. Yeah.
I think that's that last point you just made, it is one of the most critical things, I think, in not just in strategy, but just in business in general, that people are almost, I've started looking at it because the last podcast I did was around videoing, and you'll know yourself that, you know, that in the old days, you know, used to do nice long form video. Then they said it has to be less than 3 minutes. Then it has to be less than 1 minute. And now that actually, if you look at it, if you haven't captured them within 5 seconds, then, you know, it's like 5 seconds. What the hell am I going to say in 5 seconds? That, you know, so people are being more and more ostentatious. Whatever their content is, they want to say something within that first 2 or 3 minutes to get a hook, seconds to get a hook so that you listen to the rest. And it's becoming harder and harder to get your message across. Now, you could argue it's actually getting better and better because it means that people have to be able to give that elevator pitch very effectively within a minute rather than rambling on for 6 hours. So that's good. Yeah. So the challenge, you need evidence, you need consistency. So based on that, what would you say if you said you had some guiding principles for when you're starting a strategy with whoever the client is, obviously? You know, each client's different. What would be your guiding principles that you start to look at when you start looking at and supporting someone with a strategy?
Especially as I support small businesses, I think the key, it can be really, really hard to look too far in advance. So the question that I always start with to people is, where do you want to be this time next year? We're only looking 12 months ahead. It's really easy. So like, where do you want to be this time next year? How will that feel for you? How will that be different for you in terms of understanding why it's important? I think especially if you're creating a strategy for a small business, if you're a solo business owner, it's really important to understand why those things are important. What will be different for you when that strategy comes to life? Like, how will it feel? What will change in your life? What will change in your business? What will be different for you? Because if on those days when you really don't want to get out of bed and do any work and life's thrown you a bazillion curveballs, which it does, right? We can't control all of that. We need to know what's going to drive you to take the action anyway. And even if that's not the same day, but, you know, that week or the following week and say, right, my feet are going to be on the ground this time next week, I can pick that back up, rather than just waiting or delaying or getting frustrated with yourself that it's not all happening again, back to instant gratification now. Then I'd look at how we can break that down into quarters, which is exactly how we used to plan when I worked in HSBC. So looking at, okay, what's the longer term goal and how we can bring that in short term as well in terms of getting you the results. So say, for example, you said in 12 months time, I want to double my income. I want to double my top line sales, right? Okay, fab. So what would we be doing per quarter to start bringing that in and reverse engineering that backwards to today? So we can start to, again, have something to come back and assess and analyze and have a look at the results of, which I love to do. I geek out on data as a psychology grad. If you don't know, psychology is a lot about statistical analysis. So Yeah, that's where I'd say to start. Look at longer term where you want to be. If a year feels good for you, then if you can go further ahead, then great. And then start to break that down into quarters in terms of what you want to measure.
No, that's really appreciated. Yeah, so in other words, I like that thing because people talk about the why and then people then struggle actually explaining what they mean by the why. But I think that question you ask is how will that make you feel? Or how would that feel for you in a year's time is a really nice way of saying, well, that's why you want to do it. And then that actually keeps people motivated because they keep remembering what it is they're trying to drive towards, isn't it? And then you break that down into quarters. So that's good. So interesting enough, one of the questions I have is from Stephanie, a UK trade attorney. And she was asked me to ask you about some tips on mindset, which I think is quite interesting actually, because lots of people are worried about when they're doing the strategy and they put things that are very safe in there. They don't really want to say what it is they really want to do. They don't really want to stretch themselves. So her question was, how do you change one's mindset from maybe a fear mindset to one of confidence when you're looking at a business strategy?
Oh, gosh. That takes time. So in terms of creating habits, so to explain the way that your brain works, okay, so the neural pathways in your brain are created through repetitive action, including your thoughts. So if you are currently in a place of feeling fearful, the first thing to do is to start to notice when that's happening, because the only way to create that habit to think differently is to actually act on it. But again, coming back to the time piece, on average, it takes 66 days to create a new habit and to lay those new neural pathways in your brain. And what will happen is, I will almost guarantee this one, so it's going like a 90-something percent, that when you start to make the changes, because it's hard work for your brain to do things differently, you will be drawn back into this old way of thinking. So you have to keep yourself accountable. So this is why things like affirmations work. So seeing things, the same things every day, making sure that you're looking at it when, like, for you're doing something else, which is called habit stacking, like brushing your teeth, that's really automatic for you, putting a post-it on your desk that's in front of you so you can say, like, you know, what you're trying to aim towards. And the other thing here is, one of the questions I would ask you, because you mentioned fear to move into confidence, is what are you really afraid of? So fear gets thrown around as a bit of a buzzword, I think, especially in the last sort of like 5 to 10 years, where personal development's really sort of taken off into not just businesses, but into individuals as well. And think to yourself, are you fearful of failure, which is what comes up for most people, or are you fearful of success? And there's a big difference. If you're scared of it not working, yes, I understand. And we all kind of know what that looks like. But in terms of fear of success, let's go back to the last question when you were asking about, you know, how to plan strategically. If you're looking further ahead in a year's time, things might have to change for you. So you may have to give some stuff up. You may have to do some things differently. You may have to spend your time in a different way. There may be some things that you need to do differently. And do you really want that? And this is why the why is really important as well. So with your mindset and building that, first of all, be self-aware. Any change, you have to be self-aware to start making change, right? So think, is it actually fear of failure? Or is it fear of success? And if it does feel like it's fear of success, what's really going on there? Are you afraid of what other people are going to say and what they're going to think? Are you feeling like, oh, well, if I do that, then maybe I'm not going to have as much time to spend with my kids? Are you fearful that if you have the success, if it works, that you're going to have to not take 2 holidays or 3 holidays a year and maybe do less, or you're going to have to work maybe sometimes when you're like, what is it that's really making you feel that fear of success, and address that? Because then when you're coming to building a strategy as well, you can make sure that you're enabling yourself to have the success the way you want it. So if a lot of people say, I don't want to work evenings and weekends, and if this gets any bigger, I'm going to miss time with my family. Okay, so you're brilliant. You're self-aware. We've got that. Let's then have a look at what we can do to make sure that you're working in the hours that you want to work. Let's have a look at how you can communicate that with people around you in terms of what this might look like short-term and what this might look like long-term, and bringing all of that in. So Steph, I hope that answers your question.
Yeah, it comes back to that planning piece, isn't it? If you've acknowledged what the challenge is, which is what you're saying, because you then acknowledge whether it's fear of failure, fear of success, then you can then start plotting a plan to how do you then deal with that. And as you said, you know, you're understanding what the challenges are, and then you're sort of like, I think almost what you're saying is putting a plan around that to say, well, how do you deal with, for example, you're not going to have weekends, that might be more people, that might be different things. And you're right, actually, because one of the biggest challenges I've seen people have in businesses is exactly what you just identified there. They start thinking, if I get that big, I might have to employ some people, and I don't want to employ anybody, you know, I don't want to have to, because that's such a headache, isn't it? And then I'm not doing what I love doing. So there are, people are often, when they say fear, they automatically think you mean fear of failure, but it might not be. It could quite easily be fear of success. So I think there's some really good pointers there for you, Steph. So I'm glad that we asked that question. And then you talked a bit about, Nicole, about that you're a psychology graduate and therefore you're into stats. So what place does data have in building a successful strategy? Because, you know, lots of people hate data and don't want to look at it and think, oh, no, it's all come from the gut. I've got an idea about the marketplace and I'm going to go for it. So what's your view?
Data's vital. I mean, if you apply this, no matter what size of business you're working in, whether it's a global company or whether it's you're a solo business owner, think about the most successful companies, the most successful, you know, companies out there. And do you think that they're not doing market research? Do you think that they're not consistently analyzing their data? If you want that success, if that's what you're really looking for in terms of building, you know, be honest with yourself. What are you avoiding? Why are you not looking at it? Are you maybe not looking at it because you don't know where to start? You don't even know which data to look at. Do you think that when you do look at it, maybe it's going to show you some stuff that you don't want to know? Like, I was talking to a client this morning in my mastermind, and I say to them, right, let's report in on audience stats. Let's report in on sales figures. Let's look at what you're selling next. What's going on there? Where was your revenue last month? What are we doing this month? And some of them were like, I don't know. You know, these people who've started with me this month, so I don't know if I know that information. And I was like, great, this is a great place to start. Let's start from now. So we need to start looking at this so that also if we come back to like what we're talking about in terms of trends, you know, one of my clients who started working with me in May last year, she was really up and down on her income and she couldn't really figure out why. She was, you know, fed all these messages about consistent revenue and recurring revenue and wanted all of that. But actually, her business is quite seasonal. So until we looked at the data and research, we could see where the peaks and troughs were. So now what we can do is start building in quarters what that looks like. So she can take summer off. So she can work less in winter. So she can work less over Christmas. And actually, that works with her market as well. So, but it's not, but it's again coming back to, which is what I wanted to add to what we were saying just now for Steph. It's also about then thinking, okay, so if that is, so if you set a goal and you thought, oh, I want this consistent revenue, I want to double my income, I want to be here next year, and then you had that fear of success, okay, so was that the right goal then? So let's set some different goals that then align with you. And again, this is the flex and being open to it changing. So look at the data, look at the research, and then allow it to inform the decisions that you make. Yeah, absolutely.
If you are in that position that you just mentioned at the beginning of that answer, i.e. you just don't know where to start, because I think that is the majority of the people. They think, oh my God, data, what am I supposed to be looking at? What's your advice to those people?
Have a look at your revenue, your top line, and have a look at your profit. So analyze your what you're bringing in terms of sales over the last 12-month period. Have a look at your overall expenses and costs and operating costs and where they'd look at for like 12 months. Make sure you're also looking at that monthly so you can build that in when you're looking to pay yourself. And then make sure that you're also doing this. So that's in terms of your sales, but also looking at in terms of your lead gen and your sales funnel. So looking top line and thinking, okay, how many people do I have in my audience? And what does that look like in terms of conversions? The same if you're running ads, what am I spending here? What's my return on investment? So looking at that data, depending on where you're at in the business. So I've given you like three examples there that hopefully hit people at different places. But making sure that you're looking at in terms of your sales funnel, which is one of the key things, because if you don't have an audience to sell to, you could have the best product or service in the world and you'll be the best kept secret. So if you feel like you have the most brilliant idea and it is all, you know, wonderful and great, and hopefully you do feel that with confidence, then if it's not happening in terms of sales for you, have a look at what's happening in terms of your lead gen and bringing new people into your audience. Also, just to add while I'm on that, when you're busy, I know that data doesn't feel sexy because you just want to do the thing. You just want to get on with it, deliver the results to the clients. You just want to show up. You just want to do the work, right? But you need to be consistently looking at this, because a lot of people come to me who work with me in my masterminds who have said, I was growing an audience and now I don't know what to do with the current market and how to bring new people in. Where do I start? Because it's changed. Okay, it may not have changed as much as they feel it's changed. There's still things that work in terms of lead gen. And if you don't have an email list, in terms of data, email marketing is one of the best ways to measure what's working in terms of your opens and your click-throughs. Yeah. But yeah, I would really be rigorous with yourself. Like, one of the things that I do every, this is probably a little bit sad, but when I wake up every Monday morning, okay, this week was an exception as it's a bank holiday, so I did it this morning, but I will report on my audience. So I'll have a look at exactly where my audience is at on all my platforms in terms of numbers. So then when you're looking at what you're selling and your conversion rates, you can be really clear about, okay, so in 6 months' time, I want to launch this and I want to sell this to this many people. How many people do you need in your audience based on your stats and data, no one else's, to make those sales? So for example, if your conversion rate is 5% based on your evidence, then start looking at, okay, I'd need 100 new people in to sell 5.
Yeah.
My quick math isn't great, so help me with easy numbers there. But yeah. And I know that this stuff can feel confusing. And like I just said there, I'm really bad at quick maths, like spreadsheets and calculators, like are my safe haven. But have a look at it. Start looking. And if you don't look at this now, there is no better time than right now, right this moment, to start. Like, just begin. Just start.
Yeah, no, I think that's very, very good and timely advice, because if you don't look at the stats, I mean, admittedly, you won't know how bad you're doing, but you won't know how to change it either. So I think you do want to have a benchmark. And on that basis, because all the way through, we've been talking about 12 months, you know, yeah. What are you feeling about this time next year? You know, historically, in lots of the management books, you set a 3 to 5 year plan. Is that still the same, or would you always just say do 12 months, then review, obviously, if you said quarterly and monthly, etc., and then you reset a strategy in 12 months, or would you also have, you know, how do you want it to look in 3-5 years? What's your view?
I'd have a broad outline of where you want it to go within 3 to 5 years, if you can. But I've developed a quiz on this in terms of your strategy type. Some people's brains don't work that way. So if it's going to cause you a load of stress to think where you want to be that far in advance, then do the 12 months, do the 6 months. But do not wait. So say, for example, today we set a strategy. Don't wait until a year from today to set a new one. You need to already be ahead so at this time next year, you'd really be starting to probably look at that at the beginning of the year. So, or at the end of last year. So we're in May right now, right? So we'd be looking at, okay, in December, well, where do I want to be in May? In January, where do I want to be in May? So that you can, the actions that you're taking are leading you towards the goal. But to acknowledge, some people do find it very, very difficult to plan longer term. And there's no cookie cutter, there's no framework in terms of what you absolutely have to do. But if you are looking for longer term, profitable, sustainable success, which is like really what a business is all about, then you need to be seeing it longer term. You do need to be thinking about that. So if you need to, you know, get some support on it, join a mastermind, work with a mentor, work with a coach, work with a strategist, invest in that so that you're clear on the actions you're taking and the time you're spending and that it's worthwhile, it's leading somewhere.
That last point is really important, actually, I think, because people will invest in certain things and they tend to be, well, I'll invest in equipment, I'll invest in, you know, an office, but I don't invest in some of those things that are going to make the most significant difference, like a coach, like a business strategist, especially, I'm not saying everyone has to do it, but if you're not good at it and you're worried about it, as we've been talking about, and you're a bit concerned about numbers and data, not investing it is madness. And I always use the example of athletes, because even business, you know, if you look at all the top business people, actually, they tend to have coaches. And all of the top athletes don't say, well, I'm now, you know, an Olympian, or I'm now a, you know, Premiership footballer, so I don't need a coach anymore, I'll just do it myself. Whereas, you know, I think some business owners think, well, actually, I'm quite good at business, so why on earth would I have a business coach? And I think for all the reasons that you've just outlined, actually.
And to share like, I'm very good at strategy and I'm very good at business and I do this for myself, right? But I have a mentor because, and I have a coach and mentor. It's the same person because I do like it being an all-in-one, which is like what I do. So I need what I do for my clients, for myself, basically. And what the thing is like sometimes when you're busy as well, you just miss stuff. You miss the gaps. You can't see outside of yourself, even no matter how self-aware you are. And especially if you're busy, it's about creating the space to be able to reflect and think. And then obviously you go away and do the work in between sessions. But you need that space. It's vital because also to acknowledge when you run a business, you do not switch off at 5 p.m. as lovely as that would be. And I would love to tell you that that's not how it works. Like I often tell one of my clients, I say to her, I thought about your shower again yesterday. And I was thinking about this idea of what we were talking about for you and how this would work. Like, and you know, even when you're trying to switch off, when you're driving in the car, when you're in the shower, when you're on a walk, when as soon as your head hits the pillow and you get the ping, 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 ping of ideas. So having somebody to be able to bring that together for you and think how you can do that differently, like one of the most amazing phrases that I love, and I can't remember where I heard it to credit them, but is to make every day a holiday. So in business, a lot of the time people don't take time off. So the same way they're not allocating, dedicating space to reflect and think with someone like a coach, but you need to be doing that on a daily basis, and doing that on your own when you're busy is hard.
Yeah, it is very, very difficult. I mean, sometimes you can't see the wood for the trees. I mean, there's lots of things that I think I'm good at. And then occasionally I get upset when somebody points out something that I'm not doing and I'm thinking, I should really know that, shouldn't I? But it's as you said, you're so busy doing the do that you don't give yourself enough time to reflect and actually think about the business and how you can actually drive that forward, which is what strategy is all about. So just moving on to a question, which it kind of come from Athol Forbes, who's one of a good friend of mine on LinkedIn. And I was going to ask anyway about, you know, the importance of involving stakeholders in the strategic process. And one thing that she asked was that she's obviously seen some of my podcasts. She's seen what you wrote about a no BS approach. And she said that she's considered to be too direct, but she says, well, I just consider myself as being honest. And she says that a lot of that feedback she gets about being too direct is from a certain demographic, which I won't highlight, but she's sort of like saying, I can imagine
right now what the demographic is, as she's a woman.
Exactly. My wife gets exactly the same feedback all the time, where every time we go on our walk, generally she's talking to me about, well, this guy said this, and I'm thinking, right, okay. But yeah, so the question really is, how do you engage stakeholders, and especially if you're considered to be a direct person when you consider yourself just being honest?
How do you engage them? Do you mean in terms of what? So what would we be trying to engage them in?
Yeah, so I think that particular question is about, right, I'm in a business. It's not just me. There's a few of us in the business. I've got a strategy and I'm trying to bring those people along so that they all feel part of the strategic process, and also they're bought into, as you were talking about, reviewing it on a quarterly basis, a monthly basis, looking at those numbers, so that actually we're all coming together and we're all trying to get to that same why, or not the same why, but a why that is motivating for us.
I think it can be really tough. Like, as they, people are interesting, right? And we never really know why someone is behaving, acting, saying, thinking the way they are. And to acknowledge, like, half the time we don't even know this for ourselves. So how can we know this for other people? What happens though is that you make a load of assumptions. So this must be because I'm direct. They must be like this because they're not interested, because they don't care. And what doesn't happen is communication. So having the open and honest conversations, and in a way that allows everybody to have a say as well. And I think especially from what I'm hearing from the question, and again, I need to infer a little bit here as well, because the person isn't here to delve into it with, but it sounds like maybe this is about team in terms of stakeholders and kind of bringing them along that strategic process. you know, we used to have this in banking all of the time, and it's in every organization. You get some people who are absolutely in it 100%, 110%. They do more than they need to. They carry other people. And then you've got other people that just show up, do the minimum and leave.
Yeah.
And or less than. You know, I was always the person who I came in at 8 and I left at 4. I took an hour's lunch. I was a top performer consistently throughout my whole career because I was bloody efficient and I got on with what I needed to get on with. I didn't smoke. I was a smoker when I first started in the bank. I was too young then. That was silly of me. But I didn't used to take fag. I wasn't taking fag breaks. I don't drink coffee. So I wasn't having coffee breaks. Like, no judgment. But it's about thinking, okay, what also matters to these people? To me, what mattered in that, in terms of stakeholder management, was I wanted a work-life balance. I didn't want to go out and socialize with colleagues during, like, you know, in my own hours after lunch. I would do it at lunchtime, or I'd have like meetings if we needed to, but I wasn't wanting to do that after 4 o'clock. I wanted to get home to my family. So, and my friends, and at the time when I was younger anyway, Hollyoaks, I've given that up now. I was loyal, but in the last 2 years I've given up finally on that. But it's, you know, thinking, what do these people need? What's important to them? And how can this strategy, this plan, these goals that we have actually work for everybody? And also to acknowledge, if you have recruited and brought people into the business, since the direction has changed, notice that, because actually maybe these people were completely on board with what it used to look like and now it's changed. So, and I think the only real way to involve people is to have more conversations, which I know, especially as a leader, can feel really painful when it feels like you're just banging your head against a brick wall. So it is really about delving into what matters to them, like with love and respect. And again, I don't know your listener, but it doesn't matter what matters to you. If you want it to matter to them, we need to think about how we can get them on board in that way, because it has to matter to them. If it doesn't matter, we don't do it, right? So
I think it's all about, I mean, it's about listening, isn't it? And understanding the people that you're dealing with, because I think the question also was talking about that, you know, them being directive, but they consider themselves to be honest. And I suppose because I always say that, you know, I used to say that all the time. Oh, people think I'm a bit too direct. I'm just honest. Well, it depends how you're honest, doesn't it? It depends how that you're phrasing the feedback that you're giving, for example. And if you're constantly being told that you're a bit too directive, it could be the demographic, but it may just, as you said earlier, that sometimes we have to acknowledge that actually maybe I am a bit too direct and it doesn't always come across the way that I think it's coming across. So therefore I have to change the way in which I communicate the same message, because you can still give the same message. You can give the same message in many different ways and different people will accept it in the different ways that you give it. So I think, yeah, that's good advice in terms of, it's about communication, really.
Can I share something else though, while we're there on that as well?
Yeah.
Please. I was in banking, I was always told that I wore my heart on my face, right? So I am not good at a poker face. And a lot of the feedback that I used to get was about this thing here around stakeholder management. So, but some people think that you can be really abrupt. Some people feel like you're like too assertive. And some people feel like maybe you could hide it a bit better on your face. Now, since leaving banking, I have learned that I have ADHD. So what also is really, really key to acknowledge is this part that I know it feels like a bit of a hype topic at the moment as well, but it's really important in terms of neurodiversity and diversity in general. So in terms of, you know, this stakeholder management for your listener, in terms of assertiveness, yes, perhaps there is something there that you are assertive. There's also nothing wrong with that. So by changing slightly how you are, it doesn't mean that you're having to change yourself. It doesn't mean that you're having to change your values or what matters to you. But there are, and I mean, if I tell my clients now that that's the kind of feedback I used to get, they're like, what, really? But again, it's about how it's received. And the phrase that I always used to love when I was going through that myself was that perception is in the eye of the beholder. just like they say about beauty, right? So the perception is in the eye of the beholder based on their experiences, their goals, their needs, their desires, what's going on for them at the time. So be a little bit curious, I would say, to this listener as well, in terms of, okay, well, why is that? Maybe have a conversation with somebody who maybe you know is giving you that feedback, who you're closer to, who you feel more open to communicate with, and just ask some questions as to why, like what's going on there? What was it about that that made that come up, or how that was received for you? And ask, okay, so how else could I have done that? What else could that have looked like for you so it was received in a different way? Just openness as well.
Yeah, no, I think that's really very good advice in terms of just, as you said there, be inquisitive. Because I think it's very easy, isn't it? If someone gives you feedback like that that's perceived as negative, you become very defensive. And yeah, you sort of like your barriers go up. And no, I'm not like that. As opposed to, as you've just said, actually just asking a few more questions, understanding from their point of view, well, what was it I said and how did I say it and why was that like that? Because then you, because actually, we're learning every day, aren't we? So there might be things that you're doing that you could improve. And as we're talking about strategy and actually, as you said right at the outset, the strategies implemented to drive your business forward. Well, if your behavior is then preventing that from happening, then it's going against your strategy. So you do really need to understand anything that can affect that sort of drive for your business. So, I mean, you said at the outset, and I know that when we were trying to arrange this, you were saying, well, there's not really a generic one size fits all, which is 100% true. But are there any kind of tools or frameworks that if somebody was starting, they listened to this and they thought, well, I can't afford Nicole at the moment, or I don't want to use Nicole just yet, but you should do. But if you didn't, what sort of advice would you give them in terms of tools, frameworks that you've used or that you'd say they're quite a useful starting point?
I would say that in terms of frameworks, you need to know what you're selling. My biggest bit of gold dust or bomb that I can drop here in terms of your strategy, if you have a business that you want to make profit from and that you want to monetize, right, you need to know what you're selling. So a lot of the time people are like, yeah, I want to double the revenue. I want to work with this many more clients. I want to launch this program like in a year's time or whatever. Okay. But what are you really selling? What does that look like? Because I spoke to two clients about this today. So if you don't know what you're selling, your marketing is going to just be saying spray, throwing spaghetti at the wall. It needs to be leading people towards something all of the time. And I say this, like I sell every day, whether that's directly or indirectly. So in everything that I create, there's a purpose behind it in terms of building relationships, in terms of growing my audience, in terms of leading people to book a call, in terms of asking for feedback, like whatever that is, it's all to do with a purpose. So make sure you're really clear on your numbers, where they are now and what you want them to look like in terms of finance and revenue. I mean, in terms of just overall numbers, I mean, like the stuff that matters, the stuff that means you're going to take more money home, and then be really, really clear about what you need to sell to make that happen.
So when you say know what you're selling, are you specific? Because the example you just gave there, when you're talking about whether you're getting to book a call, whether you're getting, you know, growing your audience, all of those will lead to you getting revenue. But when you say know what you're selling, are you talking about every piece of work that you do, know what the purpose is for that? Or are you talking about in the more general term, know what you're selling?
In the general term, a lot of people, like, you know, I said to my clients this morning, I was like, okay, so what are you selling this month? And they were like, because it's the start-ish of a new month with the short weeks that we've had. They were like, oh, I'm not really sure, maybe this or that. And I was like, how do you think the maybe this or that is showing up in your marketing?
Yeah.
It's not clear. So I say this about your offers and your service suite and your ideal client. If you're not clear on what your offers are, I'm almost certain that your audience have no idea either.
Yeah.
Because again, this is coming back to what we were talking about in a different way, but around communication. So being able to communicate that cohesively with a structure to make, you know, you're leading people towards taking an action and doing a thing. You need to know what it's leading towards. So if you're launching something or selling something next month or this month or next week, you know, is your audience warm? Is there people that are wanting that? Is there a need and desire for that in terms of the market? Like, what does that look like in relation to your competition? What does that look like in relation to what you've done before? And if you're not looking at all of these parts that come into it, it is say and spray, which is when you pivot. It's when you think, I've failed, it's not working. So you need to make sure that you're breaking it down into as much detail as possible so that you can take action. And that level of detail that you need will be different for each person. So, yeah.
Excellent. Thank you very much. And then, you know, they say that you learn as much, if not more, in failure than you do in success. I'm not sure whether that's always true, but anyway, it depends on the individual. So can you give us an example? Because I'm always interested in examples of success and failure. So can you give examples of where you've seen a strategy building process fail and why that didn't work? Because that gives us some ideas. Then we'll move on to the successful ones.
Yeah, absolutely. I love that question. So interestingly also, I didn't used to think that failure was a word that worked for me. I was like, I don't fail. But I'm also a lifelong learner. So in terms of if that does feel tricky for you listening to this, always ask yourself what lesson you can take, which is what we're going to share now. So I was working with a client for about a year, and they decided that they wanted to pivot their business because their skills had evolved, their life looks a little bit different in terms of family. And we had a conversation around, you know, how that would work. Now, the plan, and we're talking about long-term strategic planning, we were thinking about this being at least 6 months away. We'd been building up to it for 6 months already, right? So we were like, from that point. Now, what that client decided to do, against advice, I must say that, was to just change it all now. Everything changed.
Oh.
Overnight, they lost 80% of their client base.
Oh dear.
Yeah. So you can build the strategy and you have to lean into what it feels like, but also you can't just do whatever you like. Like, you need to be strategic in the actions that you're taking. So if, for example, you've been building an audience to sell something to, because we're looking at now, let's go to the example now, 12 months ahead, where do you want to be? And you've been building towards that in terms of a bigger thing that you want to sell, or, you know, launching more of a passive offer, or, you know, more of a group model. Great. And then after about 6 months, you totally change your mind and change your business. If you announce that, if you let everybody know, because yeah, that's the owning it, going out there and saying, yeah, this is what I do, right? It's about bringing people along the journey with you. So that is definitely an example of it not working very well. We did adjust from there and took some learnings and managed to salvage some stuff. But that was not, you know, in all the work we'd done in terms of strategy building. And I think also it can be really difficult when you listen to personal development staff and friends and family as well, maybe who don't have businesses or don't understand what that's like. And they're like, yeah, but you don't want to be doing that. Just do that. Or, you know, life's too short, just do it now. Or, you know, being present in the moment, not thinking too far in advance. I get it. I get all of that. But you do need to be strategic about your business, because that's when it works.
No, 100%. And the most successful businesses tend to have a very clear strategic plan. And as you said, you can pivot. But even the pivot is planned. You don't just switch it over and you switch it on and off. You can, you know, because, you know, as your client obviously realized, it may work if you're lucky, but it's more likely to end up exactly as it did. So basically, what's the flip side of that? And it doesn't have, you know, it can be somebody you've worked with or somebody that you've seen, you know, other businesses where it's worked really successfully. Can you give me some examples of that?
Well, in terms of businesses that work successfully that we all know, we can look at Apple, right? That's always a great example in terms of business. So they knew that they wanted to be the innovative, different, thinking differently type of business in terms of IT, essentially, in terms of tech. Yeah. That's exactly what they are. They had a long-term vision and it sticks. Everybody knows that. So that's a very broad example that we all know, like a, yeah, you know, a public one. The example that I used earlier in terms of my client who came to me this time last year, she was at zero revenue. She considered going, she'd worked with business coaches before. She wasn't brand new to business. She'd left her corporate job and she was considering going back to get another corporate job because she had no sales coming in, nothing at all. But then when we started to break down a lot of the things that we've talked about today in terms of the trends in her business, in terms of what that looks like, what does the revenue really need to be? Yes, you may want to have a 6-7-figure business if that wasn't her goal. But if it is your goal, if you do want to grow it to multiple 7 figures and whatever it looks like, great. But maybe not by this time next year if you're currently at zero. So
yeah.
or maybe, but that's also like, this is a bit of free information for you here. That's a recipe for burnout because your systems won't be set up for that. Your mindset isn't set up for that. We need to grow it, scale it. So we looked at, okay, so what is the realistic goal? How can we use what you've already done that has worked? Because, okay, as at today, it may not feel like it's working, but let's look back and think, where were the trends? What did this look like? Yes, and actually you want to have 2 weeks off, 3 weeks off over Christmas with your family. You don't really want to work in August because she goes traveling then. Like, great. Yeah. So we'll lean into the trends of your business and what you need from your life, blend that together and then be like, okay, she in Q1 this year, she had her most ever successful income month and quarter. She's been booked for corporate gigs with like 4-figure investments to people like paying her to speak. She's absolutely smashed it. And she's put in the work though. So we haven't just built the strategy. We have implemented consistently the strategy and tested it and over and over and over again in terms of repetitiveness so that we can take the trends and see what is working and lean into that. So that would definitely say that's one of the best success stories that I've had. And then a secondary one, I guess, would be in December last year, a client came to me who was inconsistent income months, couldn't see forwards. You know, when I said like some people can't see too far in the future and they struggle with that. We had a one-to-one last week and she's already projecting and forecasting her revenue into December. So it's about also realizing where you're, and she said to me, like, I don't need any more sales for Q4. I've already got that. And we've just entered, we're in Q2. So it's also about, okay, if, for example, 3 years, 5 years feels like it's too far ahead, let's start looking at this in a way that's going to make you feel good. Because if that does feel like it's unsuccessful or doesn't work for you, because actually, and probably the reason why is because you've set goals before and they haven't worked and you haven't, so you're a bit frightened of doing that, which is okay. But also if you are an employee, you've been an employee and they're like, where do you want to be in 5 years? That bloody horrible, that awful question. You're like, I don't know. I'm just coming for an interview. How do I know? You have, your annual review meeting and they're like, so would you still like to be in this team in 3 years? Where do you see yourself going? And you're like, I don't know the answer to that. And actually, I never used to know the answer to that. I used to think that question was ridiculous. So I was like, I don't know. Like, I enjoy my job. Like, what else do I want it to look like? But thinking outside the box a little bit again, like not just to plug the coaching if anyone's a coach, but like being able to really allow yourself to go there and understand what's going on about why you don't want to or what else it could look like, and thinking expansively, like which is exactly what we did with the client, you know, who's moved from in a year having nothing, zero, literally zero income, to having like near on a 7-8K month. So
yeah, no, very impressive. So I can't believe we're coming to the top of the hour. Well, we're already at the top of the hour, actually. So this is going to be my last question, I think. It depends on how you answer it. So one of the things that you've put in, and you put in your bio and you put it on your LinkedIn profile, etc., is that part of your job and part of what you like to do is to get people to love what they're doing. Mm. So I suppose it's a two-part question. Why is that important to you? And then secondly, how do you go about achieving that?
So actually, the why is really interesting. So it's always been really important to me for that, because again, let's go to life is short. Like, we want to make the most of what we're doing. And if you have a business, you don't switch off at five. So you need to love it. You need to enjoy it so that you can do the things that maybe feel hard. But also, I think, especially in the last, I keep saying, I always say 6 months, but it's been longer than that, probably about 10 months of finding out I have ADHD. My brain is wired for dopamine. So it's very easy for me to say to people, but is that making you feel good? Because I can sense that it's not. Because I don't act unless it feels good for me, or unless I can see that it will feel good when I've done things, which really helps with strategic planning. But it's so important to be able to, you know, to be able to do that. I spent 10 years in banking trying my absolute best to change the culture that was work long hours, you know, yes, earn good money, HSBC were never the best payers, but I don't know if that's changed now. but earn the money, but never have any time to enjoy it. So if you are running a business and running a team and doing all of that, what is the point if you're spending so much time doing it and you don't enjoy it? Like, I'm really fortunate in the business that I've created, and I don't say lucky because I don't believe in luck, it's hard work. But if I'm having a bad day, if I don't want to do it, I go onto a call with a client and I buzz after. I absolutely love it. Like, why should we all not be able to feel like that? Even if you're an employee, you're listening to this and you're in a job, right? Why should you spend so much time at work? You spend so much time working. Like, I always say this, like, my clients are the people that I would want as friends. They're the people I like. I like them. We have similar values. We joke, we laugh about the most ridiculous things, like we talk about. But it's joyful, and it's important to do that, because, and especially if you're neurodiverse and if you are ADHD and, you know, dopamine is your crux, but also it's everybody's, right? In some way or another, like, we all want to do more things that make us feel good. So yeah, that would definitely be the why question.
I think everyone, well, I'm not going to say everybody is like that, but I think everybody theoretically wants to enjoy their work. And it appears to me that people get into a rut that either they feel they can't get out of it, I've just got to do this. And I've you know, any time, I remember in the past when I left, I think it was 2010, it was when I left and I set up my business, and people said, oh, you're very brave. And I said, no, I said, bravery is staying in a job that I don't want to be in for the rest of my life. I said, that's bravery. I said, going to do something that I enjoy is not brave at all. I said, that's your dream, isn't it? And I think that lots of people really get stuck and think, oh no, I can't because I've got a mortgage, I've got this, I've got that. And again, not to be plugging, but, you know, business coaches like yourself and, you know, people who are going to help with strategy, then if you feel that you're taking that leap of faith to do something that you love doing, then it makes sense to actually have the right strategy and get the right people around you to give you the best chance of success. And then it isn't a risk. It is probably more of a risk if you haven't got a clue what you're doing and you're just going to start trying to make some money. Then, yes. So on that note, I want to yet say thank you very, very much to Nicole Louise Weiner. It's been a very rapid 56 minutes that has passed by. And I know people think, I didn't think that strategy could be so much fun, but I did. And that's obviously why I got Nicole on the call. So really appreciate your time. And I'm really pleased that you came on and shared those pearls of wisdom with us.
Thank you so much for having me.
There you go. I told you that you were going to enjoy listening to two people talking about strategy, didn't I? So I defy you to tell me that you didn't get anything beneficial out of that conversation with Nicole, because I know you did. Let's for a second pretend that you didn't. Then if you take one thing away from it, at least take away the guiding principles that Nicole talked about at the beginning, i.e. where do you want to be this time next year, and how will that feel for you when you get there, i.e. what's your why? And then break it down into simple quarters so that you've got a step-by-step approach. And as I always say on the podcast, the key thing about the podcast is that if you found something, even if it's just one or two things that you think are really useful and are going to help you in your business, make sure you implement them from tomorrow. Don't forget to check out the show notes at www.thesalesaccelerationformula.com. And as always, subscribe, like, and share with your friends, colleagues, and anyone else who you think may be interested. But most of all, keep the feedback coming so that we can continue to improve and give you more of what you like. Hope you enjoyed this as much as I did, and as I always do, keep listening and keep growing.